Hello there, this is Terry Denise, a Lansing Community College student and your host of Ripper, an LCC Connect podcast where I interview others and ask about their unique efforts and connections in, around, and beyond the community of Michigan's capital city. Well, hello there. This is Terry Denise. Thank you so much for joining Ripper today. I have our guest, Kathy Coonan, today. Kathy, how are you doing?
Oh, fabulous. How are you?
I'm okay. This is a wonderful day. The sky is blue. The sun is out. There's barely a cloud in the sky. And our trees look fabulous before they're all torn to shreds with being dumped on the ground. The leaves fall. And so too, the season of the fall, the falling of many things, of objects, so things can go into the ground. We've got our Persephone calling us, going into hibernation for renewal, coming forth with our longer sun that we'll soon be approaching again as the world turns around our sun.
Beautifully spoken,
how do
Terry.
You feel? How do you feel about that? Because I feel like you are one to... We go through our changes and we are resilient, and you are a stronghold of a person.
Thank you.
That I have seen exude those kinds of resiliency. So do you like to, I know you do a lot of movement. Do you like to fall with a lot of your movements? And by movement, I mean dancing.
Yes, I call myself an interpretive abundancer.
Abundancer. So a yes. lot of abundance going on with that dancing.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And so my preference is live music from the heart.
Okay.
Yes. And the reasons I dance are multifold. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll start with respect for the band.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So is that your mantra that you put forth in your head before you go out? Or just in general, that's just a...
Yeah, okay. Well, I will say, as also a person who's a musician, when people dance, you know, it's helpful. And if someone is offering that space and engaging in it, you know, I've had many, many people in bands thank me for dancing, and other people too. So that's one thing. As well, I will say it's... so healing metabolically, physically, biologically, emotionally, sensually. I mean, just in every way, we're born dancing. And I feel it shifts energy on the earth, actually. Mm-hmm. And anyone with trauma, this world's a traumatic place. There's a whole lot of suffering out there. And it helps with trauma as well. You know, studies say... that a friend just shared, so I haven't looked this at that. She said, oh, did you know that depression, that dancing is better for depression than antidepressants, you know?
I can believe it.
And I think it inspires people in a world that where, you know, violence is entertainment and we're so technologically engaged in creativity and nature, you know, have kind of gone... by the wayside, I think, for a lot of people, you know, and we crave that, mm-hmm. you know. So it's kind of getting back to the garden, and we're part of that garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are, you know, and so that, yeah, so that's, I guess.
I love how you mentioned shifting that energy, because that... you shift the mood as well when you are dancing. You are
yeah,
you
my are, mood.
You can totally yes. do a scientific study on this as well, to add on to the studies, where there's a bunch of molecules that we're made of and a bunch of molecules that we have that are flowing through the air, sound frequency molecules. So you are literally shifting the molecules around you when you are dancing, which so you are definitely, I love the fact that,
wow.
I love the fact that bands thank you, because I know it, so as a fellow musician, it is one
and
of those
dancer.
And dancer. It's one of those things that happens where you get people that just stand there with their arms crossed and you're like, I am playing my heart out here. Or, you know, so to have other people that appreciate, like you said, and you show respect for them, they show respect back by thanking you for creating a different mood that lightens the place up. And I don't remember the first time we met, Kathy, but I definitely know that every time I see, I can feel some vibe in the air and I'm like, there's somebody on the dance floor. I wonder if it's Miss Kathy Coon out there. And sure enough, it is usually because you project a great energy. You project a sense of why stand around? Why be static right now? Why there's somebody up here that is definitely, they're moved to perform themselves. They're moved to have booked this time. Let's share this time with them, you know, let's have some reciprocal action going on here. So I thank you as well, because you have definitely danced for many bands that I have performed in on stage with, which so Dagwood would be one place, one space. Mm-hmm. I know Max Barr, The Avenue, probably back in the day, Basement 414.
Oh, yeah.
That space, a very collective art space. And you used to, I know you had been there at some point in time. Were you doing art there as well? Because it was a shared collective art space as
well. You know, I honestly don't remember.
It's a long time ago. It's become something else, but that used to be the loft area.
Oh, okay.
It was the basement of the loft.
Yeah, no, I do remember. Yes, I did have some interplay.
Yeah. So there's, I know well, you.
Can
and
I
you,
mention one other critical please. Thing about dancing?
Yeah.
Now, I have been vegetarian for about 35 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You made it.
So, yes, and I continue to be so. But also dancing. In Peru, you've heard of maybe the tarantula. Okay, so there's a tarantula who lives in Peru. And if you're bit, you may die.
Okay.
And the response of the community that you live in when this happens, if this happens, you're called the tarantula. And people gather, and they drum, and they dance, and the person dances until they pass out, and they dance the poison out, and they survive. Huh. And I'm going to tell you something, is that I don't get sick. I honestly cannot remember the last time I actually, like, had a cold or whatever. I didn't get COVID. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I'm blessed and I'm grateful.
Yes.
And I'm grateful to these bands for making beautiful music also, you know, I mean, yeah. It's gratitude is a good one.
So that's a lot of the somatic release is mm-hmm. what you're speaking of, where people are literally moving, making movements in their body and getting their blood pumping, moving their muscles, moving bones, moving. And it pushes out this toxicity of what you speak
yes.
of. So
yes.
I've had Emily Walensky in here, and she does a somatic class. I'm sure you would appreciate participating in.
Oh.
But speaking on the matter of moving to get the toxins out, that does speak to your brain as well. When people do move mm-hmm. at shows, their eyes start darting around. And the less that they are thinking so hard about what they look like, the more fun they have. And it's
yes.
it's that letting go of
yes.
certain moments so you can actually live in the moment. So you're not up there with your phone the entire time recording everything.
Right.
Or texting. and those are the points where you suddenly are engaged with everything around you without having to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of a healing process as well that we are regularly going through. I don't think we realize that we are regularly healing
oh, yes.
day in and day out, as well as through the years and weeks and months and whatnot. But through that, I just wanted to actually ask where some of the healing processes for you began as like a baby. where are you from originally?
I was born in Grand Rapids.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you shifted over to the Lansing area.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you, did you go to college?
I went to Michigan State University.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What did you study?
I was in the International Studies in the College of Social Sciences with emphases in political science, English, geography, and Spanish.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So some yes. heavy stuff there.
Well, it was kind of, I was forced to declare a major.
Okay.
Funny thing, I wanted to do art therapy.
Okay.
And they didn't have a program. And they said I could put together something, you know, and I didn't. Instead, I just took all kinds of different classes. Mm-hmm. But that is what I ended up becoming, is an art therapist.
There you go.
I would say.
So you shifted over to.
So that's interesting.
What brought you to the Capital City area?
Michigan State University. I moved to East Lansing and I slowly shifted to Lansing.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of time at Lansing Community College, actually.
Okay. Were you a frequent visitor to the Capitol at all when you were younger, before moving from Grand Rapids? Were you often traveling around the state of Michigan as a Michigander?
I've pretty much been planted in Lansing pretty much since I, yes, I would say so.
All right.
Yeah. And early on in 1988, I believe, was my first, I think so. Anyway, it was at Michigan State University Anti-Racist Action.
Okay.
Was, I believe, my first, I think, organization that I got involved with.
All right. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about that.
Well, now it's under different ownership now.
Okay.
So everyone be aware of that. But Max Barr was actually hosting bands that would play white supremacist music.
Oh.
Yes. Again, this was in the 80s. And so we did weekly picketing.
Okay.
You know, protesting of that. And then we would have speakers and show films just around the topic of, you know, racism, really. Mm-hmm. And like Mumia Abu-Jamal was a person that we would do fundraisers for.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we actually, back in the day, though, we did form a women's ARA because there was sexism within the group, unfortunately. And that is when I actually rapped for the first time. Yes, I'm a rapper also, yes.
I have seen you do a lot of poetry. I've seen you do slam poetry. I thought I've heard some rap in what you do, because it's usual, but there's usually the music that you do with the music that you do, that you produce. So I am impressed about the rapping.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Was this specific, were they raps that you wrote?
Yeah, well, okay. Here's the story. Okay. We were doing a fundraiser for Mumia Abu-Jamal, and it was a hip-hop, people, you know, were rapping, taking turns, and I started hearing B-ho, just stuff, and I was like, I thought we were here for justice, people, and I was like, oh, I need to say something, and I had something that I had written that was not a song, because I'm a songwriter. And I was like, well, and I happen to have my book on me. And I got up and I just rapped it out. And I was like, wow. And people are like, I didn't know you rapped. I'm like, I did not know this either. And then for 2 weeks or so, I was overcome with rap. I was dreaming in rap. And I wrote a whole bunch. And it's one of the longest pieces in my book. It's dedicated to ending misogyny, the war against female identified people. So
that is impressive and inspiring.
Fun
and
story, right?
My goodness. So I just wanted to reference Mumia, who was a political prisoner.
Yes, he is still. He's been on death row for a long time.
And where is he?
He's a Black Panther. As far as I know, he's still incarcerated, and there's still a big movement, you know, for his freedom.
Of course. So you have done a lot of activism in your lifetime.
This is true.
And even so, you, which you just spoke about, the writings that you've done, and you publish as well. So you are a musician. You are an art therapist. You are a writer. You're a performer. And
a ceramic artist.
Mm-hmm. You have a book out titled
The Truth for a Change.
And what is in A Truth for a Change? What is this book by Kathy Kuhn?
So the goal is world peace. Okay. Yes. And it's a compilation of 32 pieces. It's entirely hand done with a whole variety of art mediums. And it's poetry. There's a bit of prose in there. Some of it's in the public domain. So, yeah.
So it's a bit of a collection of your art. It's just, it's your words, your pictures?
Yeah, really. It's, I included a lifetime of artwork in this thing. And starting with...
And it's beautifully put together as well. It's so colorful. Every single page has color in it, which I adore.
A lot of it's engraved in ceramic. And this piece... I did in sixth grade. It's an oil painting.
See, this is what I mean. Pulling the stuff that that made you from your origin story, and you keep this along with you because it's a point of strength for you. It's something that you keep in as your healing process as you go on. And that's amazing to me. That's one of those things that I think that as we get older that we forget that sometimes that there are pieces of us that we should not ever throw away, that should always be with us, that are part of who we are in going forward and processing our day-to-day beats, because we have our unique heartbeats. We have the beat that we, of course, march to or roll to, glide to sometimes, depending on who you are. So I love that you have a piece that's in your feature here.
Well, the sad truth is I ran out of books. I sold out. I'm a self-published author. And
so this is a sold out
edition. It is. There are copies. There's a copy in the library, downtown library.
Oh, nice.
In the basement.
At Cattle? Mm-hmm. At the Capital Area District Library.
There is in the local section in the basement. As well, my CDs and some of my posters are down there.
So, okay. And then
a few area businesses have house copies.
Okay. Yeah. And then so...
And 750 people have the other copies.
My goodness. So you publish yourself, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the name of your business, by the way?
It's Peace Is.
Peace is the distributor and the business. What else do you like to sell? What else do you like to do through Peace Is?
Well, I will mention real quick, I'm working on a second edition of my book.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. Okay. Yes, so coming soon, everybody.
Yes. Do you have a date by?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
It's when it happens. That's when.
Exactly. Right. But no, I've been writing more recently. And
so we'll have addendums.
On the topic of dance, mm-hmm. I will say, get this, dance for me. Be as beautiful as you can be. Mm-hmm. We must be free.
I love that. Snaps.
Thank you. Yeah.
So there'll be more that you'll be speaking of on dance on the second edition. You're going to add some stuff to the forwards maybe? Or
Well, if you were to read my book, you would see dance already entered into it. But my newer pieces, I really kind of want to put them all in the public domain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I do. So one of the pieces I could show you, I did write out in ceramic.
Okay.
So it's definitely going in the book. And it's going on to the end of a piece called Warm Summer Rain. It's on my CD. So it's right here.
And what is the CD titled?
It's Love Rose is my band name, and it's World Peace is Inevitable.
Love Rose.
World Peace is Inevitable.
This, oh, lovely. I love the
Thank you.
The tattoo. Is the name of Love Rose, and there's this beautiful rose encaptured. Man, that's some where
Devil's
did you get that
Day, Devil's Day all the way.
Oh my goodness. Gotta
Washington
get in there.
Square.
Gotta get in there. That's a beautiful piece, as well as this piece that you're showing me here. This is one of the ceramic pieces.
It is, yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this says peace overcomes.
Well, you know what? Can I tell you something?
Yeah, please.
I could sing it for you.
Go ahead.
Sure. And you can read along.
Okay. So we have we are doing an impromptu bit here. So who else is in the band with you?
Well, I say we are Love Rose.
We.
Exactly. Because I often pass out percussion instruments to other people. As well, I collaborate with a lot of any variety of other instrumentation. So I play percussion myself, hand percussion. And currently, I have a friend who plays guitar and banjo, and another friend who plays piano, and a friend who plays cello, who are maybe showing up more often. So that's exciting.
How fun. Yeah. So it's more the royal we.
Yeah.
A collaborative we. Yes. I love this. And that includes me right now as well.
Yeah.
All right. I've got my shaker over here. I'm ready to go with you. So I'm just going to read over what we're going to hear from you.
Okay.
The words that you are going to be saying.
And there's the back.
Our peace overcomes, fear stops and runs, dishonesty gets lost at sea. And then on to, if greed starts to tear us apart, cruelty gets lost in the dark, hate shrivels up and crumbles away, love and compassion are here to stay.
Exactly. all true.
My reading of that was not the best.
No, it was
so
nice.
Let's go into singing to make it even better, Gathy.
Okay.
All right.
And again, this, we've got a lot to talk about. So, but this comes in at the end of a song.
Okay.
Right. So I'll just start. Peace overcomes, fear stops and runs. Dishonesty gets lost at sea. If greed starts to tear us apart, cruelty gets lost in the dark, hate shrivels up and crumbles away, love and compassion are here to stay.
Yay! That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That was so much fun.
Thanks for playing along. You know, people really appreciate. I've had people just like, oh, it's the first time I ever got up on stage or whatever. And, you know, it's just nice. It's nice. Children, you know, adults, I mean, whatever. It's just always fun when you see somebody. It's a good feeling.
Participation.
Yeah.
That is key. And then that goes along with just trying to, I guess, restore order with ourselves and working along with people as well within ourselves. But these are the kinds of things that are fully a part of a healing process, not only within ourselves, but with others as well.
Exactly. Also, we do Bob Marley covers as
yes.
well.
Man, yes. I totally had Bob Marley in my head, which is so funny, before you walked in.
Nice.
I had
just
three
like
little
so
birds.
Many people around the world. You know what? Mm-hmm. That song.
Three Little Birds?
That don't worry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. About a thing. La da 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 da. Because every little thing is going to be all right.
Yep.
Is something that I just love. You know, people sing that all over the world.
It helps reset.
Yes.
It's just, and it's such a great morning song as well.
Oh. And again, there's so much suffering going on, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's what we go through in our lives. There is, I mean, we were born in suffering. We're born out of the wombs that are going through their things while they're feeding us out to a world. So there's, you know, it is this whole process and a whole cycle through generations that we have been seeing for as long as we are a thing. And so it is refreshing to know that people such as yourself are out there going, when we go through our own things, we can still push through to try to help anybody else next to us. I know I go through my thing and it gets rough sometimes, but you still have to keep pressing forward if you want to make sure that we're not adding the stress upon any others or sure. suffering on others, because there's no other way that we can get through this. And the world's going to keep turning without us. She's doesn't care. She's like, you want to add more stress to me? Are you laughable? Ha ha. Laughable. It's like, well, I'd rather work with you, world. And she's like, yeah, you probably wouldn't want to do that too, huh? Mm-hmm.
So I will say real quick, yes. just to add, with the ceramic, this is a piece I did. It says, "You're so beautiful."
Yes, I have seen this.
The reason you've seen this is because I've currently have them in 34 places, I think, mostly in the Lansing area. Most of these places have helped out the Refugee Development Center. So it's a good guess. If you walk into a place where you see this poster, mm-hmm. you should thank them for helping out the Refugee Development Center.
The Refugee Development Center.
Yes, they're okay. on my website. You know, they've been around for, I think, 23 years. And we used to get over 600 refugees a year, and they still need so much help. And so I do silent auctions to help just do some fundraising for them and promote them as an organization. And actually, if you go to my website, thetruthforachange.com, yes. you can scroll to the Refugee Development Center, learn about them, and even donate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll put that up on as well on as the tag in the tagline. We'll have all of your areas of many, many places that you have so people can come and visit. And that's great too to participate, because we are a sanctuary area.
Well, East Lansing is sanctuary. Lansing is safe haven, because sanctuary would have at this time resulted in a lack of funding. And so, right now, sanctuary status, is no longer recognized. This is a recent decision by the federal administration.
Okay.
Yes.
So, well, to just go with the, I guess, an overall idea of we are, the state of Michigan as is usually a place where many, many refugees can come and find a safe haven.
Unfortunately, I don't believe that we are taking in any more refugees in the United States of America at this time.
But
exactly.
Usually,
but we have thousands of refugees in Lansing.
Yes.
People who came here.
Typically, and I grew up with many, from East Lansing. So it's nothing but and you going to MSU, of course, know that this was a hub for international students, families, and what. And it's such a helpful area to be able to meet other people, so you can learn how to develop your own area and networking with others. And that helps with output towards others for the world and whatnot. But I know as a student growing up, that helped to put a different outlook on the world for me personally. Yeah. And it gave me, helped with being able to project differently and the receiving of where other people were coming from, because nobody's just talking about everything that's going on in their life all the time, because we're sitting there trying to figure out how to do algebra, you know, or whatever.
I did spend a long time taking classes at LCC.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I went through the massage therapy program. I took the Nia dance class. I took African literature. I took so many different classes. I was involved with a group called People for Positive Social Change.
Yes.
Yeah. And I lived real close. And so I just kept taking classes here. Mm-hmm. And really, it was a beautiful experience. So yes, I am a star.
LCC star. So and with your experiences, that does help with the growth around here at LCC in Lansing in the capital area, and then outward as well to our beautiful waters, our Great Lakes areas and beyond. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you as the star that you are, beyond even being an LCC star. But you are in your own right. You've got, I mean, it's you are definitely up there in the sky, hanging over the head, going across the sky and dancing your way across. And I hope that this is going to be this upcoming year will help radically with shifting not only our movements with dance and thought, but with our healing process, as not only within our city, but just as our nation and across the world. And I believe that you are definitely one of the caretakers, I guess you could say, for helping out with that kind of that notion.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
thanks.
You coming here today. And I hope your turn, your rotation around the sun brings you more joy and reciprocated strength, resilience, and healing that you are putting out there as well. I hope that comes back to you in many fold.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, you guys, for joining us today with my special guest, Kathy Kuhn. This is Terry Denise, and you have been listening to Ripper. Please have a great day and evening. We'll see you later. Thanks for tuning in to Ripper. You can find more about this and other LCC Connect podcasts at lccconnect.com.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Mason Promise Scholarship since 2016. The Mason Promise Scholarship is a community organization of volunteers that guarantees funding for 2 years of Lansing Community College education to selected Mason Public School students. These selected students are chosen by the Mason Public Schools at the end of the fifth grade and then become a Mason Promise Scholarship through an induction ceremony. Over the course of the next 6 years, these students receive mentoring and support, as well as introduction to career possibilities through the Pathway Program. For more information on the Mason Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
LCC Alumni Stories, a show dedicated to highlighting the amazing alumni of Lansing Community College. I'm Steve Robinson, president of LCC, and on each episode, I have the awesome privilege of getting to know one of our many inspiring alums and hearing about their experiences at and since leaving LCC.
Listen to this program and many others on demand at lccconnect.org.
In 1911, Thomas and Emily Dalton looked with compassion at their community. They didn't have much money, but they dedicated themselves to meeting physical and spiritual needs by creating the City Rescue Mission of Lansing. For over 100 years, through the Great Depression and several recessions, through world wars and cold wars, the mission continues to work in Michigan's capital area, seeing the need and meeting the need. A lot has changed in the past century, but the power of compassion in action will never change. A small act of kindness can impact our entire community. We see it reflected every day in the progress made by women and men working to transition out of homelessness and into independence. They can do it because of the support of our fellow rescuers. Together, we provide food, shelter, and hope to hundreds of people in need. For more information on the City Rescue Mission of Lansing, visit bearescuer.org.
A 7-week job training opportunity is now enrolling, and many can participate tuition-free. Those who have graduated from high school within the last 5 years can attend the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp at no cost, thanks to grants from the Michigan Department of Economic Development. Those interested in the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp provided by the LCC Job Training Center can learn more at lcc.edu/JTC.
LCC
Connect.
voices,
vibes,
vision.
Washington Square On Air is the audio town square for the Washington Square Review, Lansing Community College's literary journal. Writers, readers, scholars, publishing professionals, citizens of the world, gather here and chat about all things writing. Hey there, this is Melissa Ford Luckin, editor for the Washington Square Review. I'm here today with two authors, Reem Kashat and Eliza Mann. Hey, Reem, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So you've been writing for a long time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started my writing journey officially in 2011. I didn't have any clue of what I was doing. My friend Eliza had dragged me along to a writing group, and we started learning. And I think I'm still learning.
Okay.
But
let me ask you something real quick. What drew you to it? Like, why did you feel compelled?
To write?
Yeah.
I was reading a lot of fan fiction, and sometimes life just feels like you can't control your own surroundings. So I felt like I was just going to be God and create my own world and my own story. And that's kind of how it started.
Mm-hmm. With the fan fiction.
With the fan fiction, yeah.
Where did you read the fan fiction?
Fanfic, that fan fiction
yep.
website.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading a lot of Harry Potter fan fiction.
Okay. All right. So talk some more. How did you transition from fan fiction, and how did meeting other writers move you in the new direction?
Well, when I started going to our local GDRW chapter, we would have workshops and they would always be talking. It was just such a inspiring place to be. So I would just try to write and quickly learned that I had a lot to learn.
Right.
But really, I was just kind of trying to figure it all out and eventually decided to go back and get my degree in English.
Okay.
And that's where I started learning more about the craft and really trying to write stories.
Talk a little bit about your writing program with the English.
I went to Southern New Hampshire University. I did an all online class school. It was great. Because it was all like workshops. So each class, you would write a story a week. So I learned to write really tight, really mm-hmm. short stories every week. And it was interesting because you would write the story, and I always wrote from a romance lens. And not everybody in my classes right. understood that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but it was just fun to write the stories, and it challenged me to hone in on those skills.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because writing a short story is quite different from writing a novel. So
Absolutely.
You're hanging out with novel writers in the writing group and then taking coursework writing short stories.
Yeah.
So was that at all confusing working with those two kinds of plot structures?
I didn't really, while I was in school, I really wasn't writing books. I kind of stuck to shorts. So
okay.
My previous published work were all short stories. They were like little novellas. So it was easier for me to write those because writing a big story felt so daunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Earlier you said that when you first came to the group, you realized you had a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that stands out in your mind?
Oh, yeah. there was, I won a critique, phone conversation critique with a Big Six editor. And I took the day off of work.
Right. Just for the phone call.
Just for the 1 hour phone call. And she didn't call me. She forgot. So then, you know, we rescheduled for the next day, and I was just so nervous. I took my lunch break, went down in the cafeteria, and I talked to her, and she basically didn't talk about anything other than the fact that I needed to learn what writing stories actually meant.
Uh-huh.
And it was just devastating.
What had she read of yours?
I had written a fantasy, and it was like a dragon world and, you know, witches and and it was just like a maybe 5 or 7 page intro.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just, she demolished me.
Oh.
And I was sitting in our cafeteria at our building and just crying. I like
after the call though.
After the call, and I terrified the poor guy that owned the deli in the building.
I remember that.
Remember him? He was like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'll be fine." It was horrible, but that was like a turning point for me. It was like, I'm gonna learn the mechanics, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
So
and so by mechanics, do you mostly mean like the structure?
Yeah, just in all. Like I went mm-hmm. back to like the nitty gritty. grammar and story structures and voice, passive, and, you know, just the whole thing.
So after your crying moment, how did you dust yourself off?
Oh, it took a minute.
Yeah.
It took a minute. It did take a minute, but that's when I had decided to go back to school.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more about your journey.
So I think I was publishing under, self-publishing short stories and one novel under Sage Spelling. It was a name I chose because it reminded me of Severus Snape from Harry Potter, SS, you know.
Okay.
but it was the name that I was just experimenting under. It was the kind of thing where you write a story because everybody's like, oh, they're buying this at this publishing house, so you should try to write that. So you try to write it, and it doesn't pan out for you, so you self-publish it. And it was like almost like the area where I was just, the name was and the brand was more like, I'm going to try this under here, and I'm going to try this. And I never really found my voice under that because I felt like I was just trying to do what everybody else was saying was popular or selling right now or, you know, in the market. So shortly after, not shortly, a long time after, I decided to really go back to what I enjoy writing, and it was women's fiction. And that's where I am right now.
Okay. All right. So talk a little bit about what that looks like now.
Now, I actually, this year, have rebranded myself from Sage Spelling to Ram Khashat, and I'm writing women's fiction, family saga. It's I started a new series called the Family Bonds Generational Series Saga, and it is a story about women and in different generations and how they cope with dating. For me, I come from a small community. You couldn't date openly in when I was in my 20s. It was very like secretive. You had to sneak around. And then now, 20 years later, things are different. So the story in the series kind of looks at that journey as a whole and the different ones for three generations of women.
So this to you feels much more like yourself, more authentic, and you feel more connected to it. Talk a little bit about what you were writing before.
So I had a coming of age new adult novellas series. I wrote a fantasy. It was, I don't even know what it was, paranormal, kind of erotic type romance. And then I wrote a contemporary romance with the Cocky Hero Club. And that was more true to what I write now. I feel like it has more of that feel. So, yeah, I was just kind of everywhere.
Was there ever a time when you were writing and you felt like your own authorial voice was showing up on the page, maybe for the first time?
It was probably in Wicked Wingman, which was part of the Cocky Hero Club. That's when I noticed where my voice was. And it was because I was putting more of me and my culture and my viewpoint into the story.
Yeah, which is always feels so much better than trying to write something that feels like it's fitting in someone else's like box or whatever. Yeah. Did it help you pick up writing faster or just felt more satisfying?
I think it does help me now that I'm finished the first one and I kind of have the feel I'm writing faster. I was able to write two short stories to go along with it fairly quickly because for a while I wasn't able to like kick them out like that. So yeah, I think now that I know my voice and I know my viewpoint, it's been an easier journey.
Yeah. Hey, Eliza, did you notice a difference?
I did. So we beta for each other from time to time. And I was on my way to Chicago. We were driving. And Reem had sent it over. I like looked up and I was in Chicago because my partner was driving. And I was like, oh, this is good. Like, and, not
and
that,
then you're like, the other was stuff, good also.
Right. The other was good also, but it was different. It was like plot driven. Character forward, like it was like all the good things, you know, and not that it hadn't been before, but this felt like a real world you could slip into, you
right know and maybe mean? Like she was there with you,
she was there and you could hear her voice. It is very family based and we always complain about our families. You know, and our culture is kind of aligned in some ways, and I'm like, you know how they are, and she's like, yes I do, and I could totally hear the voice and the cultural differences resonated. It was amazing. I love
Thank
that
you.
Book. It is
that.
Very good.
Thank you. So.
Yeah, because we often, as writers here, you know, write what you love. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think everybody ignores that and writes what they think they can sell.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where this would go because it started off with women's fiction and then it became romance and then it became a family saga. And it's like, I don't even, you know, and when I pitch it, that's how I pitch it. Mm-hmm. It's all the things because it doesn't fit really into a spot on the mm-hmm. bookshelf. You know what I mean? That mm-hmm. I don't ever see a spot like that there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So talk about your author self. You had to kind of reinvent yourself.
I did.
And so you must have learned some lessons from your first self that you could tell your second self. So
yeah. This time around, I took a class. I'm all about learning. I'm always taking classes now. And I took a class called Publish and Thrive. And within that class, it was the reason why I decided to change my name. Because she spoke about like being very clear in your author brand. And I think because I was so not clear in my author brand before, that it was a good idea to switch. So I picked a name. Reem is my real name. And using that, it almost is a brand in within itself. And I had to start off with a brand new website, brand new social media. The class was good because it gave me a roadmap of mm-hmm. how to go from point A to point Z, you know, and it was helpful, but it's a lot of work to start mm-hmm. from scratch.
Right.
Yeah.
What lessons did you learn the first time you invented your writer self that did carry in?
Oh, that was hard. I don't know.
Not always showing to anybody, right?
Huh?
Not listening to other people.
Well, yeah, we spoke about that not too long ago, and that's true. Yeah, not listening to everybody. And
you mean
jumping whenever someone says jump, you know.
Okay,
jump,
so you mean there's too much incoming advice and you have to really sort out what is good for you.
Filter it out.
Okay.
And because it would be like before, you know, you'd be working on a project and someone would say, hey, I'm going to do this anthology. Do you want to do it with me? And before I'd be like, okay. And now it's like, I don't think that's going to work for me. You know, you mm-hmm. have to really look at what you're capable of and what time you have allowed. And if that project's actually going to move the needle forward, I have to be smart in the projects that I choose.
Be more strategic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's only so much time.
Absolutely.
Right. All right. So talk a little bit about some of the steps you took when you were first recreating your new social media.
Okay. So I initially had to, you know, get the new website name and the new social media platforms.
How did you decide which ones to use?
It's the ones that I like using, right? Okay. So I went with that. I like TikTok, but I'm not really great at it. And I like Instagram and Facebook. So I stick to those. I didn't even create a Threads for it.
Again, making choices and not trying to do everything.
Yeah, because I've never been that type of person that would, you know, just put out a blank statement like people did on X or Twitter, you know. Mm-hmm. So Threads has that same feel and it just didn't appeal to me. So I stayed away from it. That was mm-hmm. one of the first choices. It was also finding someone that can create me the website in a way where it could merge my brands, you know, so I still have Sage, mm-hmm. But also, you know, because I don't want to get rid of her because she's there, mm-hmm. but still feature the Reem portion of the work. And then to try to get newsletter followers, I had to write short stories and, you know, create like newsletter subscription and, you know, try to get people to sign up for it and do the soft email welcoming, mm-hmm. you know, and that's all. It takes time. So mm-hmm. it was all of those little pieces.
Yeah. So taking the class really helped you organize all of that.
Yeah. It was great because she literally broke them down by little tiny pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I know a lot of people when they first start writing and they want to create an author brand, mm-hmm. it's just a lot. And I think what you guys said about being strategic, doing what works for you, mm-hmm. it's probably got to be really helpful for people because otherwise, you know, everyone will say, well, you should do this or you should do that. And
there's so many options, right? Mm-hmm. So self-publishing, it's, you know, do KDP or do Ingram or be exclusive to KDP or go wide. There's just so many choices. And because I had already done one portion, I figured, you know, when I was doing Sage, I figured I would try it, you know, in the other way.
So how did you approach it?
I went wide. Mm-hmm. I did wide.
Explain what wide means.
Well, I should. Wide is adding your book to where they are able to purchase it at any retailer. And then that would also get you in possibility of, you know, bookstores, independent bookstores. You can go
Target.
Target, yeah, Target, Barnes and Noble, and you know all the things. I mean, you might, unless I sell a lot, I'm not going to have my book on a table at Barnes and Noble yet. But you know, I might be able to get one in an independent bookstore, and having that capability going wide, libraries, which is a great option too. You know, so having going wide, you're able to get to more readers than when you're in like Amazon KDP exclusive. You are only for Amazon readers.
Okay, so a person would need to, you know, decide what's best for them.
Absolutely, and the type of books you write. So with me being women's fiction, wide is just a better audience.
Yeah. Talk a little bit some more about your friendship. I know last time we were chatting, we talked about the starting. So it's your turn to say your side.
Well, she told it almost correct. Except he's Eric is my husband, but yeah.
Whatever.
So,
the lies.
But she was, I often credit her for bringing me into this world because I would have never thought it was possible to even pursue something like that. More than fanfic and putting your, you know, chapter per chapter on on a website. I didn't think it was possible, but you know, she dragged me kicking and screaming to a meeting, and and it was just been like having a buddy with you. So when you go to these new spaces, you feel very isolated. And for me, I never got to feel that way because she was with me every step of the journey, from, you know, writing conferences to signings to, it was like you going, okay, I'll go. If, you know, it was, you know, very like, I always had someone and I always had that support system because of our friendship.
Yeah. Talk about the time when you guys knew that you were like friends. Like, how did you know? Because you got to know each other. You started hanging out together, doing some writing stuff. And
I don't know. It just kind of happened. It was started to overlap between work and writing and then family. It was like, I can depend on you in any aspect of my life. Right. And it just melted into this friendship. It's it was organic. It just happened.
I think so. And I think the reliability factor too, right? So, you know, I have friends, right? But nobody understands what it's like to write. Like nobody gets it.
Definitely. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you guys both on together, because in writing, like you said, most people just don't get what it's like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's thousands and thousands of hundreds of thousands of words that you write yourself.
And calling somebody and saying, I can't make it work. They can't get together. And having that person that goes, did you try this? Okay, you know, you always need to work on this. You know, that that is perfect, right? Yeah. It's so helpful. And even when the bad stuff happens, like we picked each other up off the floor.
Yeah, because after that editor, I cried in the deli. I went into her office and cried for another half hour. You know, it's like...
So how is it different crying to another writer than it is to other people?
They know other people don't get it.
Right.
They're like,
why are you crying? Why,
who cares? Who's that lady? You know, but it's like they don't realize that every word and every part of creating that story, even if I had no clue what I was doing, I put a piece of me in there. And when someone, you know, crushes that dream, you just, it crushes you. And only another creative can possibly understand that.
Yep. And if they've been through your journey with you. And also, sometimes it seems to me, and you guys tell me what you think about this, that it's helpful to have one or two really consistent sounding boards. And not, so when you go to a meeting and, or a conference and you meet a bunch of other writers, if you talk to everyone, like we were saying, and you absorb all the information and all the ideas from everyone, you can leave just overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I was saying that I don't think, I love taking workshops, but I'd rather take them online versus going to those big conventions now and taking all the workshops, because that just becomes so overwhelming. You're not able to absorb the information and be able to filter out what's what you want and what they're, what works for them and what works for you. It's harder to do that in this big, vast.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So I've been taking, like, I've been taking classes on the InkerCon is virtual this year. Well, I think it's always virtual, but this is the first year I'm taking it. And I'm able to sort through the workshops and be like, this is good for me, and learn from it. Versus I remember going and just like from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., we're like workshop, workshop. And it just becomes overload.
Right. And then when you add in the networking and the social elements, it's hard to balance all that at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it takes a certain amount of bravery to set aside advice that you're given sometimes. Mm-hmm. How do you know when something is good for you, and how do you know when you need to set it aside?
You get a feeling, right? You kind of know when someone says something to you, how it's going to fit in to your vision. You get like that, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a pit in your stomach, right? Like, I don't know. This is making me nervous. And I feel like if it makes me nervous, it's probably not a good thing.
Nervous, but not excited.
Not excited, right? Yeah. So I think that's kind of, I just go with my gut now. Uh-huh. And I feel like just because we've been doing this for so long, that you have to follow your instincts.
Yeah. I'm thinking that when you first got started and you were doing writing and you were probably doing it well, technically well, but you weren't doing it as you completely yet. Mm-hmm. You hadn't developed that intuition. And I think maybe what I'm thinking now is talking to you guys is that you just have to be patient with yourself and hang in there and trust your own intuition and wait until you feel like you can really trust it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what part of the industry is good for you? So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, when we first started, I would have never considered self-publishing at first because it was so taboo, you know, and then we would be sitting in these rooms are like, oh, no, we were we shared a cab. Yeah. With the man that...
Mark Coker.
Yeah.
From Smashwords.
Go ahead.
We're so stupid. He was like, hey, you know what? You should really check into self-publishing. You know, I have a really good company. And we were like,
I don't know. I'd rather go the traditional route.
You can just keep your little company to yourself. Thank you.
And he was like, okay, but the nice man paid for our cab. Even though we were like, we basically insulted him and his life work.
I hope he never remembers me.
Well, it's a good thing I go by a different name. So.
That's right.
He sees you two together.
That's
like,
right.
I remember them. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, ebooks were the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just goes to show that industry has changed so much, even in just the past 10 years.
It's true.
Yeah, it's wild.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about your process, how you go about, you know,
writing.
Your own writing, because you're in corporate America as well.
So I'm a binge writer.
Okay.
I don't write every day. I sometimes don't write for a couple of weeks, and then I'll write for a week straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will stop for a couple of weeks and then write for another 3 days. And I think it's just because being motivated, you know, fighting the procrastination, mm-hmm. as well as just being inspired. And I feel like the truth is once I write, I am more inspired and I will write more. If I do it frequently, it's when I pull myself out, then I get lazy and then procrastination hits.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a binge writer that if I set myself a deadline, I'm more likely to hit a deadline. So then when I just, you know, with the stories, I get the ideas from everywhere. You know, I see, like, the other day I saw my brother and my father, like, arguing over something. I'm like, that's got to go in a book. You know, like, that argument has to go in a book.
Uh-huh.
You know, little things like that. I get the little ideas from stories we hear. One of the things that inspire me, too, is giving people second chances.
Mm.
And I love second chance romance. So I like taking maybe an idea of someone that, you know, just needs another chance, you know. And starting over, and I think the older I get, I feel like, you know, starting over at 40 is great, you know, and giving that the happily ever after. So that's a lot of things I like to focus on in stories.
What you were saying about being a binge writer is contrary to that idea that you have to write every day.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that that's not necessarily true, and that writing is something you do over your whole life. It has to be the way that you do it, your own process. Do you typically plot out your whole book, or do you plot it as you go? How does that look?
I think it just changes all the time, right? So I actually noticed, I saw this workshop, and I was like, oh, I do that. So I think it was called a skeleton for, like, a novel. So you, like, if it's going to be a 90,000 word, you kind of write a 30,000 and it becomes from beginning to end, and that's your skeleton draft.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, that's genius. But that's what I like. I know that's kind of how I do it. I usually write very short and then I fill it in. Maybe not 30,000. Usually it's like 40. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done. Now let me go and add. And that has been, I think, what works mostly for me.
Mm-hmm. How do you know what you need to add in?
I build my characters, right? We get the idea of who we want and what we want, what stories we want and how they all plot. So I spend a few hours kind of thinking of the characters and their goals and motivations and stuff like that. And then once I built that skeleton, I read it through and go, okay, no, you know, that's when the creative part starts, where mm-hmm. you're like, okay, the story takes you here or the characters take you here. And I kind of just, as I read, I'm like, oh, it needs this. And then you just kind of, it spreads out, you know, goes mm-hmm. its own direction.
Mm-hmm. So you trust the story and let the story go where the story wants.
And I mean, if it hits a wall, then we have to kind of figure it out how to get her off the wall.
Yeah, then you call Eliza.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, I don't know what just happened, but.
Are you thinking of anything that she's left out?
No, you know what? I do think you have little squirrel moments too. Mm-hmm. I think all of us do, though. Like, where we're like, I want to write this. You know, so I do think you have squirrel moments, but for the most part, she's more consistent with staying on track with the story that she's writing. And I think you got everything, though.
I mean, she's right about the squirrel. I'll get like 20,000 into or 30,000 into a story and be like, I don't feel like writing that anymore. And I'll move on. That does happen, which is really bad when you have a bunch of like unfinished, you know, work. But it's also good when you can go back and be like, oh, this wasn't so bad.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you figure out why you started it in the first place.
Yeah, because the story that I originally, the one I just published this year, it actually started in 2015 when we were in New York. Like, that's when I got the first initial idea for it, and that's when I first started writing it.
Mm-hmm. I think that...
Did it start on a cruise ship?
Yes, it technically started on a cruise ship. Now it's a small town, you know, a fictional town I started, you know, in the West Bloomfield, Farmington area. I planted it there. But yeah, originally it was supposed to be like a Mediterranean cruise.
I think that's fascinating. That's something that readers probably aren't aware of, is how someone may start writing a story and then it could take, you know, 6 years, and then it might sit somewhere for a couple of years, and then they pick it up again and they're like, oh, this is awesome. I love myself. I wrote this.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, sometimes I think it's just a timing thing, you know, and it sounds like it worked out great for you that you found yourself and your voice and the stories all at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it would be really interesting for someone to check out all your social media and then compare. Right?
Oh, the difference.
Yeah,
probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a homework assignment for anyone who's interested. So we're going to put your links in the show notes also so people can check you out and do their comparison thing and get back with us and tell us what they find. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by the Audio Town Square of the Washington Square Review. Until next time, this has been the Washington Square On Air from Lansing Community College. To find out more about our writers' community and literary journal, visit lcc.edu/WSR. Writing is messy, but do it anyway.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcast on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.